This episode is sponsored by State Farm. You a small business owner looking for insurance that fits your needs and budget? Well, look no further than State Farm. State Farm agents are not just insurance providers. They're also small business owners who live and work right here in your community. They understand the unique challenges of running and protecting a small business. When it comes to small business insurance, State Farm knows what it takes. Create a plan that fits your needs and your budget. State Farm agents are ready to help you choose personalized policies that truly understand your business. Insure your small business with a fellow small business owner. Talk to a State Farm agent today and get started on personalized small business insurance that fits your needs. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today. Ready for an awesome episode? Well, so are we. But you know what? Before we get to it, I got to tell you that members of Navy Federal Credit Union could earn more and save more. Bam! Not all financial institutions offer you as many choices for savings options as our friends at Navy Federal do. Start your savings journey with a low minimum deposit. For example, you could open an Easy Start certificate for just $50. And then how many certificates do this? You can then add money at any time and watch your savings grow. To learn more, visit NavyFederal.org. At Navy Federal, our members are the mission. Navy Federal is insured by NCUA, Equal Housing Lender. Membership required. Terms and conditions apply. Loan subject to approval.
Created live on Fireside.
Live from Joe's mom's basement, it's the Stacking Benjamin Show. Joe's mom's cousin Diana, coming to you live from the Fireside app. When does frugal go too far? Today, joining us to talk cheap, it's the co-host of the Frugal Friends podcast. Huh, it's almost like we strategically pick topics based on the guest. Welcome, Jen Smith. From the Afford Anything podcast, it's Paula Pant. And from this here podcast, it's Jeff Bezos. No, just kidding. He's busy bathing in champagne-soaked money now that he's retired from Amazon. So it's just OG. And now a guy who loves himself a good unbranded beer, Joe Salcihi.
Do you remember the old days, Diana? Well, you probably don't remember this, when the unbranded beer was like, it was a white label and it just said beer in big, big black letters.
Well, given that I'm not much of a beer drinker, I don't think I'd remember those days. They never existed for me, Joe. She's
like, probably not. It's like, even if there was a label, I wouldn't know what it was.
Bring on the Trader Joe's wine. What is it, $2 Chuck?
That's, isn't it up to, with inflation, does it become $3 Chuck?
Probably, I don't know.
Hey, everybody, welcome to Friday on the Stacky Benjamin Show. As Diana said earlier, I am Joe Salcihi, Average Joe Money on Twitter, and welcoming everybody here, hanging out with us on the Fireside app as we make a live recording of the Stacky Benjamin Show. And our friend Doug, my mom's neighbor, has the day off today. He's actually golfing, which is incredibly scary. We're recording this in a day we normally don't record. He's like, I got to go golfing. We're like, fantastic. We can upgrade, and we get Diana instead. So glad Diana's here, but let's meet the rest of the crew who's here with us. First of all, this guy sitting right across the card table from me, Mr. OG, is here.
What's shaking, bacon?
How are you, man?
Oh, people are clapping. That's fun. Good. Back from vacation. We were in Florida for a week and then up in Northern Michigan for a couple weeks and did the cannonball run. I think
that is brutal,
but we did it all in one day on the dot. Listen to this. When we pulled out of the driveway in Houghton Lake, we had the everybody had to guess what time we were going to arrive before we put in the GPS. We had guesses of 2 a.m., 1:15. Caroline said midnight. I said 11:15 on the money. And we pulled in the garage 11:15.
Yep. Yeah, that's an ugly, ugly drive. What time did you start from Michigan to drive all the way back here?
It was exactly 18 hours.
18 hours. Holy cow. And a woman who never wants to travel 18 hours to go anywhere. I don't, that's a horrible transition. Paula Pants here from Afford Anything.
I would love to travel 18 hours to go places.
He was yesterday or the day before in a car. You were on a train.
I was. Yes. I was on an Amtrak from Boston to New York City was the one that I took yesterday.
Oh, nice.
2 days ago.
And
great trip.
We're talking about frugal. I'll tell you, I was looking at Amtrak tickets from Texarkana to Dallas. The bad news is it was going to take 6 hours to drive. If I could drive it in 2.5, and it would take 6 hours to get there. The good news is it's like $35, Paula.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's way more comfortable than flying. You know, you can get up, you can move around. You've got more space. I mean, traveling by train it takes longer, but it's fantastic.
I know. I love it. Somebody else does the driving and I get everything done. Speaking of somebody who has had things flying all around her house lately, because she's in St. Petersburg, Florida, where I believe a little tropical storm hurricane called Elsa just went through. Jen Smith from Frugal Friends joins us.
Yes, live from the eye of Hurricane Elsa.
Duh.
Trees are down, fences are down, but spirits are high.
Well, was it scary?
No, we've just been trained to say all that. We're fine. It was rainy all night, and then we woke up and cleaned up the trees.
And that was it. Done.
Yeah.
You have a fantastic podcast, the Frugal Friends podcast, but I want to talk about that. You have a big event coming up that we love helping you promote. Tell everybody what's going on.
Absolutely. Starting Monday, July 19th, we are having our first virtual event called The Future of Frugal. And so we have invited over 20 really awesome speakers. Most of them have podcasts. Most of them have been on Stacking Benjamins. And we're going to talk about what the future of frugality looks like. So no more of this cheap stuff, the clip-in coupons, the rebate apps, none of that. We're talking about buying less, buying sustainably, being good stewards of our time, our resources, our natural resources. And so we are super excited. And the whole event is free. It's 4 days, and you can watch the day's talks whenever you like. They're not scheduled out. So watch them whenever throughout the day. And frugallivingsummit.com to get a free ticket.
That's awesome. We'll have a link to it on our show notes page at stackybenjamins.com. We're so happy you're back with us here, Jen. We've got Jen. We've got Paula Pant. We got OG. We got Diana. This episode is sponsored by State Farm. You a small business owner looking for insurance that fits your needs and budget? Well, look no further than State Farm. State Farm agents are not just insurance providers, they're also small business owners who live and work right here in your community. They understand the unique challenges of running and protecting a small business. When it comes to small business insurance, State Farm knows what it takes. Create a plan that fits your needs and your budget. State Farm agents are ready to help you choose personalized policies that truly understand your business. Insure your small business with a fellow small business owner. Talk to a State Farm agent today and get started on personalized small business insurance that fits your needs. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today. Let's start talking frugal, people. Well, today's piece comes to us from a blog called The Tex-Mex Mom. This one's new to me, but Paula, you read some blogs. Have you ever seen this blog before?
I have not seen this blog before, but you know, when I looked at it, I had this feeling like it reminds me so much of the blogs that I used to read a lot back, you know, a few years ago.
I was going to say, I really love it.
Yeah. Yeah. It has that, like, just that vibe of a mom writing about her family, writing about saving money, you know, writing from her own personal experience. Those were the blogs that I used to read when I first was getting started, when I was first learning what blogs were.
Yeah.
That was my entry into this world. So I definitely had some nostalgia reading this.
Yeah, these very personal experiences. The blogger's name is Rebecca, and she wrote this piece, 5 times when being frugal goes too far. And so, Jen, you're the guest of honor. We're going to start with you, and I'm just going to take these 5 in order, guys. We'll start off with number 1. Rebecca says, Jen, when the quality is even cheaper than the cheap price. So too far?
You know, I will push back on this one a little. I get what she's saying. Like, when you buy cheap things just for the sake of them having the lowest price, yeah, I mean, that's definitely cheap. But the example she gives is that sometimes for some pieces of clothing, it does make sense for her to buy them new, kind of like jeans for her active child. For me, I really prefer to buy secondhand, not just because of the cost, but because it keeps new clothes out of the fast fashion ecosystem. So for me, it would be worth maybe spending the same amount, but getting more secondhand jeans for my child versus just one pair of new jeans and maybe going through those jeans faster. Yes, but you can find really good quality stuff that is even brand new at some of these like kids consignment stores or pop-up events or even thrift stores. Mine is still just a toddler right now, so maybe we go through clothes too quickly for me to realize this.
That's what I'm thinking. When my kids were born, we got a bunch of new clothes, and man, they were out of those initial onesies in a hurry, like bam, gone.
Yeah, we haven't really bought anything new. We've gotten new things as gifts, but predominantly, we try and get everything used, I mean, in general. And we've seen really great quality come out of thrift stores, and especially in nicer areas. That does make a difference where you go, because nicer areas, they give away things before they've been torn to shreds. So you can strategically plan it to get quality for a really cheap price.
Oh, gee, you're on the other side of this. I know. I think I've known you long enough to know that you would prefer to buy something that's going to just last a long time, which means maybe paying more.
I was thinking about you, Joe, and being a part of the fast fashion ecosystom.
I'm totally look at what like, I'm.
That is such a
people see fast fashion.
They, how did she know?
Think totally. Everything I'm wearing came from Hot Topic.
It sure did. Yep. In 1997. Well, for me, I think that on the clothing thing in particular, we use the word cheap when we mean the word inexpensive. And then we also use the word cheap when we mean low quality. And so what you're trying to do is you're trying to find good quality stuff that's at a low price. And I think that makes a ton of sense. My kids go to a school that requires uniforms and polo shirts and shorts, basically. But I don't think we've bought new uniform clothes for the kids since maybe like the first year that they were there. And I've got a freshman in high school and a seventh grader and now a kindergartner, because every year, and it's happening actually this week, they have a, you know, like a turn-in party, basically. You go to school, you turn in all your stuff, and the things that are still of reasonable quality, you set out and you can sell them, you know, if you want, or give them away or whatever. And so that's what we do. We take all of our stuff that that the kids have grown out of from the last year and put them on the rack and then kind of go back through the rack. And there's occasionally some things that we have to get new. But to the uniform stuff, we buy secondhand because it's so expensive to buy at the other place. And it's the same stuff. It's a polo shirt, you know, and whatever. So
yeah. Why not buy a secondhand?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, Paul, it seems to me that you've got this mathematical equation. Speaking of knowing people, you must be thinking about there's this equation in your head that you work out where frugal becomes cheap when it comes to the cheap price.
Well, I'm it's not sophisticated enough to be an equation, but I do I do agree that my tendency is towards buying things that are durable, high quality, that will last for a long time. It seems to me that the time, the effort, the mental energy required to constantly replace things is, you know, makes it not worth it. So if you can get fewer things and have them last longer, that's a win.
Do you find, by the way, that spending time then at a thrift store, like Jen was saying, looking for those quality merchandise, that's a good ROI?
No, personally, I don't. Not for things like clothes. If it's some higher end item, like maybe a piece of furniture, something with you know, a above $500 price tag, or an appliance,
yeah,
you know, sure, yeah, I'll absolutely look for used appliances. But for a low ticket item like an article of clothing, no.
With that stuff, Paula, you know, furniture or appliances, you're not going out to, you know. To if you're thinking about redecorating your living room, that's a thought that goes on for a long time, several weeks, months, you know, maybe years even. And if you have it in the back of your mind and you're thinking, if I could find the right thing, you know, I might be interested. And you happen to, you know, happen upon a garage sale or something, you know, or an estate sale, or in a facility that has, you know, gently used, things. Now you've got it in your mind and you can say, this is a great value. You know, mm-hmm. I can get the piece that I've been looking for the last 6 months or the last year. And I don't have to go to the department store and pay the retail price for it. Mm-hmm. But I'm kind of with you on the clothing. You know, if I need a pair of shorts, I'm going to go get a pair of shorts.
Yeah.
That's so funny because I would personally buy an appliance new, because I've had worse experiences with used like kitchen gadgets, and I buy my clothes used really easily. So I guess that's like the beauty of frugality is you really can pick and choose what works for you. To be frugal, you don't have to be frugal in like every single way.
Oh yeah. Like, what's that famous line? Spend lavishly on the things that matter and go cheap on things that don't, something like that.
Maybe. I don't know.
Like I've got yeah, no clue.
No, I mean, yeah, you're right, Joe. I mean, you're butchering it. And I would also by trying to, spend a whole bunch of money on the things that you care about and spend as little as possible on the things that are commodities.
Let's do what Fireside's made to do and open up this conversation. Stephanie's joining us. Stephanie, when it comes to cheap, where is that line when the quality's even cheaper than the cheap price?
Joe, thank you for having me at this stage. You know, what's fascinating to me about this conversation, and Jen, I think you probably echoed something that I was going to mention. I have a good friend of mine that is very frugal, and I tend to spend more, but on fewer pieces because I find that they can last for an incredibly long time. And I will tell you, I did a study with her and I said, for the next 12 months, I want you to spend as you normally do. And for the next 12 months, I'm going to spend as I normally do. And at the end of the year around Christmas, I'm going to ask you, I'll buy you a bottle of wine and we're going to sit down and go through receipts, whether that's groceries and where you shopped, it's clothing and where you got it, et cetera. Do you know that I spent less at the end of the year than she did? And it blew her away.
Wow.
And she was horrified. And I said, I think that so much of what the idea of frugality is, and on the flip side, spending maybe too much, is I think fundamentally about our relationship with money to begin with. I don't know. Would you agree?
I totally would agree. But what that kind of reminds me of, Stephanie, and I'm going to ask Jen from Frugal Friends this question. Jen, it seems to me that what Stephanie's saying, you know, a lot of the stuff at the dollar store, as an example, is really overpriced at a dollar.
Yeah. I mean, Stephanie, you hit the nail on the head. Like it really comes down to your relationship with money. If you can identify the things that you value and you spend without guilt on those and completely eliminate other categories of spending because you've identified, I don't really value these. I don't really need these. So you can spend whatever you want. And yeah, frugality kind of has this like connotation for buying a lot of things at a low price. And it does tend to end up with that scenario, that the person that maybe bought quality but spent more or looked on the outside like they were spending more may have actually spent less. And that was a big reason we wanted to, the Future Frugal Summit is talking about trying to change that idea about frugality to be more like values-based.
But this is a really interesting topic, and I'm so grateful you brought it here. Thank you all for being here with us today.
Well, Stephanie, before you go, I'm going to kick off the second. I'm going to have you kick off your thoughts on the second piece of this blog article that we're discussing. And the second one that this woman, Rebecca, writes is, frugal goes too far when you waste a lot of valuable time. She says, I make an effort to save money on groceries, and one thing I do every week is check the store ads to see what's on sale. However, when the sales I like are at three different department stores, I often have to choose one of the stores to shop at, simply because I don't have time for them all. So what do you think about that? Frugal versus cheap when it comes to your time?
Well, I think that valuable time, we make assumptions and we're placing a judgment call on that person's time. And I can't do that. Perhaps this is somebody whose end value of the money that is saved as a result of the time she or he has spent was time well spent. And actually that valuable time translated into the exact result she or he wanted, which made it actually valuable time spent versus valuable time wasted. Value, indeed, even valuing time, is also a financial equation. Does that make sense?
Well, that totally makes sense. And Paula, this sounds like something that you think about.
It absolutely, absolutely. So I have nothing to add other than
ta-da.
I agree. Yeah, ta-da.
Way to go, Stephanie.
Well, on that note, thank you all for having me. This is a fantastic conversation. And Joe, thank you for inviting me up. I really appreciate it.
Thanks.
I'll hang around the audience and enjoy. Thank you so much.
Thanks a ton for hanging out with us, Stephanie. We got Chris here with us. Chris, you've got some thoughts on designer clothing.
Yeah. Hey, guys. Again, thanks so much for inviting me to the stage. This is great. What a fun time. Yeah, it is really hard for me to pay full price on designer clothing. You know, I'm in the Midwest, and it was super hot this spring and this summer. And every season I kind of cycle through.
I thought you were going to say, Chris, not to cut you off, but I thought you were going to say you live in the Midwest and you look super hot in those designer jeans, but you were going a different way.
I was. Good call. But yeah, so I've cycled through like a few pairs of cargo shorts. You know, I'm a dad, a few pairs of cargo shorts every year, right? Every season. Literally for like 20 years. Like I've had shorts that are 20 years old. And this year, you know, and I've mended pockets, right? I've sewed them up, I've used them. And this is the thing is I went to Goodwill. I bought another three pair of cargo shorts, you know, three different pairs for like $4 a piece, and they're going to last me another 10 years or more, right? So it's just one of those things where it was quick, it was easy and cheap. And it'll last me a long time. So that's just my two cents.
Thanks a lot. Well, hang out with us here for just a second, Chris, because I want to bring Diana into this conversation. Diana, a lot of people may not know that you were in the corporate world, right? And I think in the corporate world, what Chris is talking about may not make sense as much, because I remember I used to buy these really cheap shoes, right? And then I got rid of them and I upgraded to some good shoes. And I can't tell you the number of people that told me after I'd figured it out, wow, you're not wearing those cheap ass shoes anymore, Joe.
Well, first of all, those people are rude.
Right. Absolutely.
You know, it's funny because from my history in consumer products, I honestly think I have such a hard time buying the more expensive stuff because they're all coming from the same factories in China, honestly. So I think that's kind of my stance on it. But yeah, you can find really good stuff at Goodwill stores. I know I remember one time I found a brand new pair of jeans, just my size. They still had the original tag on them and they were like $100 and I got them for $10.
Wow.
So, you know, sometimes you really have to hunt for that stuff. So that's why I appreciated the point about time, because I think about some of the time that I spent when I was very, very frugal, when I was getting out of debt. And I'm not sure that some of those purchases I made were really worth the time that it took to find them. But I think it's frugality is one of those things that you kind of have to experiment with and see like, what is your level of frugality and hunting for, lower cost options? What level is comfortable for you? And that takes some experimentation.
But also, Chris, obviously with those shorts, as an example, mm-hmm. if you were a realtor, let's say, showing people houses all day, I think part of that job demands that you look a certain way, right? So when it comes to that stuff, would you then buy more designer clothes?
Yep. Actually, great point. So I remember I was at a work event, like a corporate function. I was actually speaking at a corporate function. And I had a really nice, like, Bill Blass shirt on, right? And it was one of the first times I wore it. It was like a purpley color, right? So people were like complimenting me on, they were complimenting me on my shirt. And one woman came up and said, yeah, you look really nice today. I like that shirt. And I said, thank you. This is my Goodwill special. It only cost me $5. And a buddy of mine I work with, he pulled me aside and said, bro, don't tell people that. And I'm like, what? Why? I was proud of the fact that I bought a $5 shirt and it looked nice.
That's awesome though. But not, and I love the applause for people that are listening to this on the feed. The sound effects here on Fireside are pretty amazing. But I guess in that story, I think I'd want people to think that I spent a lot of money on that.
No, I am not. I guess maybe that's just, again, the way it was brought up. You know, I absolutely take pride in the fact when I can save money. You know, I'm not afraid or I'm not embarrassed about that fact.
Chris, thanks for joining us here on stage.
Yeah, thank you.
I know that Kate, you had requested to come on stage. Here she is. And we'll get your take as well. Kate, thanks for joining us.
Hi, thank you all. I'm not sure if this was touched on earlier or not, but, you know, there's a difference between frugality and consumption, right? So if you're being frugal and being conscious of what you're buying versus, you know, kind of buying into the more is better in the end, and there's been, I think, you know, some studies on this, you're still spending a lot of money if you're just out there to consume, even if it's at a lower price. And I think this also goes back to something Diana and Joe, you were talking about, which is there is, you know, investing in quality pieces. If we're talking about clothing, apparel, furniture, things like that, which, you know, it's good to be frugal, but if it's not going to last you longer than a year, are you really saving any money in the long term versus investing in quality pieces? And quality and price, as Diana pointed out, are not the same thing whatsoever. You know, what Diana said about being manufactured in the same factory,
yeah,
whether it's $100 or $10 is completely true. So I think for me, it's frugal is one thing, but overconsumption is another. And I'm just curious to know everyone's kind of thoughts on that or experiences with that.
Yeah. Paula, I want to bring you in on this because I think that this idea of maybe minimalism or Kate, like utility, right? Utility, the item, not just buying it because it's cheap, but buying it because you actually need it.
Exactly. Exactly. Sometimes an obsession with frugality can become that obsession with consumerism, the obsession with buying. And sure, you're buying for less, but you're still buying. There's still the dopamine rush of getting something new, of acquisition. So I agree that, you know, scoring something for 70% off means that you're still it's still 30% on.
Right. Right. It's still money out of your pocket.
Exactly. And so not buying anything at all, being a minimalist and only getting the few things that you absolutely need, as you said, utility. That's the way to do it. And I guess the end result of that is that then your focus, if this is executed perfectly, it would mean that then your focus would have to turn to production rather than consumption, because other than the things that you're consuming routinely, like you know, food or shaving cream, other than those things, you've got everything you need. You don't need more. And so there's nothing, almost nothing left to buy. It's time to turn your focus to what can you make rather than what can you buy.
Oh, gee, when you work on financial plans with people, you see this, there are things people want and there are things that people need. But to Kate's point, where do you help people draw the line?
I think that our job, and I guess just comes from my perspective of trying to make things simple for me, is how I think about how to help other people. And from my perspective, I think about it like, if you can solve all of your financial goals already, right? If you are on track for the things that are important to you financially, then you have permission to do anything else that you want to do. You know, if you have some constraints, which frankly, all of us do, then you have to start prioritizing what's more important. Is it more important to, you know, have a few extra years of early retirement, or is it more important to buy the lake house, you know, or I think it's beyond, you know, what kind of jeans do we buy or something like that. I'm thinking kind of those big, gigantic,
yeah,
you know, life altering types of decisions where you're at the fork in the road and you have to decide which way to go. There's, you know, nothing wrong with the plan of I'm going to save as much as I possibly can, and I'm going to eat ramen noodles from 22 to 32 so that I can be completely retired at 33. It's perfectly fine. Some people don't agree with that. Some people don't like that model. And then there's also people who are like, the heck with this. I'm going to spend money like crazy. I'll save what I can. And if I got to work till 70, so be it. That's perfectly fine too. You just have to do what's right for you and for your family. And if you're on the path that you want to be on, then I don't think there's any shame or anything in whatever decision you make from a money standpoint, whether it's, you know, $200 jeans or $20 jeans, frankly.
Hey, we're going to have more of this discussion on frugality here in just a second, but I think I think it is time, Diana, for us to maybe do a trivia segment. What do you think? You ready?
Oh, I was born ready, Joe.
All right. We've got some people that we're going to have help us with trivia. And for those of you who are new to our trivia challenge, we have a challenge that's been going on all year long between our 3 year-long contributors, my co-host OG, who's here, and Paula, who is here, and Len Penzo, who has the week off. And Jen, you're going to be playing on behalf of Len Penzo. Sound good?
Sounds great. I think I've played on behalf of everyone now that I've got Len.
You've now done the trifecta.
I've been going for all 3, and I finally got the last token.
Here's the score so far this year. OG is leading with 10. OG, last week when you weren't here, the guests have been doing great in your honor, dude. They have been rocking for you.
That's so, my secret. I'm not going to be around at all the rest of the year.
You just don't show up and things go well. Len has 8 and Paula has 7. Paula, you're in your same place here, sneaking in the back.
I this is the ranking that I'm most comfortable with. It's where I tend to spend most of the year, but don't worry. The end of the year, I always pull ahead.
Which, by the way, has never happened. Just for people that have not heard the show, you have not pulled ahead at the end of the year yet.
I've looked like I might have.
She's like, look at the time, right? Well, Paula, we are going to pair you with somebody hanging out here with us on Fireside, and we're going to pair you with Kate. So, Kate, you're going to be on Team Paula. I know you can do it. Kate, when you're not stacking Benjamins, what are you doing?
I am a content creator and writer in the space of sustainability and climate change. So everything from writing my own content to ghostwriting to different video and audio formats, everything climate change related.
Awesome. Cool. Do you want to tell people where they can find you?
I would normally, but my sites are currently being relaunched. Oh, no. KateBagby.com or WorldThreadsTraveler.com. Just give it a couple weeks at this point.
Deal. Awesome. Well, I'm glad that you could be here with us. And where are you located?
Just outside of Boston.
Awesome. You are just up there. Paula, you were just in Boston, right?
Yes, I was actually in Cape Cod. So
nice.
I spent 4th of July in Cape Cod, which is beautiful. Highly recommend.
Fantastic. And we will pair, Chris, we're going to pair you with our guest, Jen. Chris, when you're not stacking Benjamins, what are you doing?
I'm actually blogging my divorced dad's journey to retirement.
Awesome.
So, talking about spending, saving, investing, all that jazz.
Sweet. And the website is?
heavymetal.money.
Awesome. And you and I talk on Twitter quite a bit.
We do.
Yeah. Awesome. We do. Well, I'm glad you're with us. So you are team Chris and Jen. And then OG, you and Gertrude are together. Gertrude, you're on the winning team, it looks like, so far.
Winner, winner.
Yep, absolutely.
All right. Those are the teams. Everybody ready? Diana, you ready to do this?
Let's do it.
Here is our trivia question.
Hey there, stackers. I'm Joe's mom's cousin, Diana. And did you know that Amazon sold its first book on this date in 1995? They didn't have the one-click ordering yet, so you had to put in all your details. Can you imagine setting up the world's first Amazon account? Hey, there's this bookstore across the country that I've never heard of. Let's give them my credit card information. I know it's hard to imagine a day you wouldn't do that, Gen Z. Believe it or not, there exists a period in time historians call pre-Venmo. It came just after the Mesozoic era. Oh, crack a book. Since we're talking Amazon today, here's a question. How much did Amazon have in sales its first week of operation? I'll be back faster than you can ask Jeff Bezos for a ride into space.
So the way we do this, OG, you and Gertrude, because you're the winning team or leading team with 10 points, you guys are guessing first. That first week they were open for business, how much money did they bring in?
So what year was this? 1994, 1995, you said?
Yep, 95.
95.
Okay. So I'm thinking that's probably that. Would that have been the beginning of online shopping?
Yes.
Okay. So my guess would have to be real low then, because like Diana said, who wanted to put their credit card in way back then?
What are you thinking?
Gosh, you know, the frugal side of me says like $2,000.
So the question is how much was the total sales for the first week of operations of Amazon? And yeah. We have to figure out whether or not old Jeffy boy was a good marketer or not. Like nowadays, you know, there's courses on that stuff, right? Like how to launch your whatever you're selling online, and you can sell millions of it in the day. But I'm with you. I think the number's pretty small. I like the number 837. That was the number that came to mind. What do you think about that?
$837?
Dollars, yeah. A really small number.
That's a very small number.
All right. So that
837.
837 locked in from Gertrude and OG, which means Jen, you and Chris. Chris, what are you guys thinking?
My first thought was like, they probably sold one item and then it got returned. So they probably ended up negative after fees, right? Or something.
So the number of sales, so different than revenue. So I'm just thinking 1995, I mean, I didn't even have a credit card yet. So, I mean, I would be afraid of, I don't know, man. I mean, did anyone even know about them? I think I'm going to be even lower. I think the first week, let's do something crazy, Jen, like $39.
I'm with you. I'm locked in on the 39.
All right. Chris and Jen, 39. And that means, Kate, you and Paula, you've got $39 and 837. Kate, what are you thinking?
Oof, this is tough. There was an interview with this, I think, on Guy Raz's, and I know the company was in the negative for so long, but that's not number of sales, right? That's their revenue. Paula, what are you thinking?
Well, I mean, either we take the entire upside, like guess 838 and take the entire upside, which is a large range, or we anchor to the two previous guesses and say that it's somewhere in between 39 to 7.
See, I think it's like closer to 50. I'm going to guess it was like family and friends, but I don't know. Paula, I'm defaulting to you on this one.
Oof. All right. Well, I mean, if you think it was like maybe closer to 50, then the thing to guess would be 40. And that gives us the top half of the upside from there.
Let's do it.
Paula, you good with that?
All right, let's do it.
All right. And Chris and Jen, that's how the game's played. You guys now don't have anything above $39. We would love to tell you what the answer is, but we don't play that way. We're going to be right back. Stackers, controlling your money on a day-to-day basis comes down to two things. Number one, great communication, either with yourself or with a partner. And by great communication, what do I mean? I mean, sitting down with your app of choice and putting together your strategy based on what you spent the week before. It's super easy. A 20-minute meeting a week. You look through your expenses and then you plot out what are you going to do next week. And you know what? That might seem little, but the big things stem from that. And if you have an app that keeps that in front of you, that helps make it even easier. And the app Cheryl and I use is Monarch Money. We've been using it now for about a year. As you may know, I've used lots of different solutions, and this is by far the one I've stuck with the longest. It helps Cheryl and I collaborate. We can talk about our financial goals. For us, it's travel. We're also adding to our house. We have a goal in a few years to really work on our lawn as well and just make it a pretty place to live. But the travel piece, as you know, if you've listened to me for any amount of time, that's a big one. And what's cool is I can put our financial independence goals and our journey up right next to our budget, because everything at Monarch is very intuitive. It is very customizable. So what the heck is Monarch? You're sitting there wondering to yourself, aren't you? Person I just made up. Yes. Let me tell you what it is. It's an all-in-one personal finance app. It gives you comprehensive view of all your accounts, your investments, your transactions, and more. You can create custom budgets, track your progress toward your financial goals, and collaborate with your partner. And now, Stackers, because you're a Stacker, you're going to get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/Benjamins. Got to have the slash Benjamins to get the extended 30-day free trial so you can see that you'll like it as much as I do. How does it work? Well, it's very intuitive. It has a simple, intuitive design that makes it easy to set up, customize, and use. You can collaborate with your partner, family, or your financial advisor. What's cool is you can invite all these people to your account at no extra cost, so you can collaborate and everybody gets their own login info and everybody gets a joint view of your finances. And as I mentioned earlier, it's customizable, and best yet, it's ad-free privacy you can trust. No ads. You're not being marketed. When I had other apps that were free, I got marketed all the time. Well, not only do they not do that, they also don't sell your data to third parties. After trying out Monarch for myself and using it for about a year now, but on a daily basis, I totally get why it's the top-rated personal finance app. And right now, because you're a Stacker, you're going to get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/Benjamins. That's monarchmoney, monarchmoney.com/Benjamins for your extended 30-day free trial.
America starts the day with America in the Morning.
First of three pushes of storminess.
Hi, I'm John Trout, your host for the latest news, politics, entertainment, business, and weather.
A speech with political overtones.
Our staff of correspondents provide a fast-paced look at the world with specialized reports from where news happens.
The judge's decision was based on finding there is a
likelihood. So far, the central bank appears to be threading that.
Concise, accurate, and fresh each day.
America in the Morning, the podcast, available wherever you listen.
So starting, Gertrude, with you in OG, $837. Looks like you guys, Gertrude, are guessing $1 billion based on everybody else.
So I'm feeling pretty good about that because I thought it was, you know. Yeah, so I'm feeling 2000. Pretty good that we got the top half.
She still got her 2,000. That's right. And then Chris, you and Jen at $39, but you got lopped off by Kate and Paula. You still feeling pretty good with 39?
You know, I still, for some reason, think it's in the negative, but I don't know why. I don't think you can get negative sales even from returns. So right? I don't know.
Yeah, you're giving people money to take your books. That's it's not not a great business model. Chris, so Jen's feeling good then. Chris, you feeling great?
Yeah. I'm feeling good.
Yeah, and then Kate and Paula, $40.
Not feeling great. No. Not gonna lie. I'm not feeling great whatsoever on this one.
Well, if you've heard the show, Kate, you will also know that Paula's gut instinct is generally the one she should avoid. So at least partway through the year. But we'll see. Here we go. Diana, you ready with the answer?
All right.
All right. Here we go. Let's hear who's gonna take home the bacon.
Stackers, I'm Joe's mom's cousin Diana, and let me ask you this: how many romance novels does one person need? Looking at Amazon's success, I think Joe's mom and I could create our own online bookstore. Between these, the Harry Potter books, way more encyclopedias than anyone should ever own, and Nancy Drew mystery stories, by the way, that Ned Nickerson, so dreamy, we'll be well on our way to becoming the next Amazon. Before I go Bing how to make a best-selling book website, let me get back to today's trivia answer. The question was, how much did Amazon have in sales in its first week operating? Despite being a newly opened business, that didn't stop Jeff Bezos and Amazon from ranking in $12,000 in opening week orders. It looks like the winner is OG and Gertrude.
The rich get richer.
Wow.
So I guess 2,000 might have been closer.
2,000 might have been $12,000. I'm guessing, Jen, that the negative number was maybe slightly wrong.
Yeah, I guess. I think I've maybe just been in online business for too long. I'm too jaded.
Well, Chris, thanks to you. Thanks, Kate, also for playing. And you know what? For being good sports and being brave and coming up here in front of our studio audience. Shoot me your email, joe@stackingbenjamins.com, and we'd love to give you some Stacking Benjamin swag. So thanks for joining us for the trivia. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Kate, before you leave, I want to go back to this blog post that we've been working from. And for people that are new here in the auditorium here on Fireside, we're working through five times being frugal goes too far. And Kate, I want to get your take on this third one, which is when you turn into that customer. And I don't know if Kate, if you've ever been that customer. She says, if you've worked in fast food or retail, you know who that customer is, the one who argues about the price, doesn't understand whether coupon isn't giving them the discount they expected. I remember working in retail and you'd always get this customer. I'm like, you know, hey, I'm 17. I can't change the price of this Big Mac. Is that where does frugal go too far there for you, Kate?
It does. So I worked in both retail and food services. So I'm very familiar with that customer and the many likes of them. And honestly, what I'm seeing in my work is that younger generations, in particular Gen Z, are actually changing this narrative, particularly around production, in terms of campaigns to provide living wages in the fashion industry to farmers. And so I do see it happening still, right? It's still pervasive with the older generations. I think we need to understand the context specifically in the United States, you know, the post-World War II, you know, the kind of bargain mentality and the fact that prices were so low, but then we need to look at inflation and living wages and the price of things right now and understand they haven't kept pace. But I personally am very, very happy to see younger generations actually turning around and asking the employees at these companies, why is the price so low?
Yeah.
How can you put something on sale for a dollar? How much does that garment worker actually make? So yes, there's that customer. I think we are seeing a transition away from that, thankfully. But I think, you know, there's always going to be people that just are going to want to bargain. It's a fun, you know, game experience, but we also have to understand it's culturally rooted as well, right? So I don't want to keep it limited to the United States. In certain geographical regions, that's typical business practice and that's how things are done. In the United States, it's very different. So
yeah. And I think about that too. When I was in Southeast Asia, I was told that it was very appropriate to bargain, and that's what everybody did. And they expected you to bargain and kind of set the price. But, you know, when I'm a 17-year-old working fast food, I'm like, what? I can't change the price of that quarter pounder. Like that's not going to happen. Thanks for hanging out with us, Kate. Paula, let's talk about that, about bargaining. Kate makes the point that this may be generational. Do you think it's generational?
Well, so Kate's point specifically was about a generational attention to the living wages of workers and the treatment of workers. And while I am very supportive of Gen Z, I also think that this is a discussion that's been going on for a long time. You remember Kathy Lee Gifford and the sweatshop controversy. I mean, we saw baby boomers and Gen X and millennials all talk about living wages. Gen Z is doing it now, and that's fantastic. You know, unfortunately, people have been, generations prior to them have also been addressing these issues with some success, but with also much to go along the way.
Yeah, I agree with Kate that I feel like, you know, in public, the narrative is changing. But then I look at the profit margins that Walmart and Amazon have, and I go, well, maybe we all talk a good game, but we still buy the cheapest stuff possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. At the end of the day, it's hard for the average American consumer to act against their own economic self-interest. And particularly when you have people who, you know, who are making $30,000 or $40,000 a year, and you're asking them to buy a $7 shirt versus a $27 shirt, you know,
it's a difficult moral conundrum.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. I want to get through. We have two more here. And number four is, and Jen, I wanted to ask you about this one, because as somebody on the panel who's married, when you and your spouse disagree, I would imagine at your summit coming up that there's going to be some discussions about how to talk frugal with your spouse.
Yeah. And you might not guess it, but my husband is a lot more frugal than I am.
Really?
He borders on cheap for sure. And so it is. And we do have like really hard discussions about like, how do I spend on the things that I value when the things that I value are different from the things that you value? Because we've both taken the time to identify those things. But just because you're married doesn't mean they're going to be the same things. And so there comes with a lot of grace when your spouse spends money, what you seemed, to think is frivolously, on things that you don't care about. But knowing that you have the same permission in your life. So that's kind of that. That's a discussion that we have a lot. I like to spend money on beverages like coffee and alcohol. And my husband does not like either of those things. So we talk about that a lot.
You don't like alcohol in your coffee?
I'll drink it in my coffee.
She's like, hey, let's go. Yeah. It's like, I got Bailey's in my coffee right now, Joe. Is there a system, though, to solving this? Because she says at the bottom of this piece that it shouldn't be my way or the highway, right? I think anybody knows that if you come to any relationship with a my way or the highway, well, a lot of people will take the highway. But do you have a strategy or a technique to have these discussions about maybe hubby, you're being a little too frugal?
I think it comes down to knowing yourself and being self-confident. I tend to sometimes overthink myself. Am I being too frivolous? Am I being selfish? Am I expecting too much from him? But I think one of the things frugality can do for you is it really forces you to get creative in self-discovery almost. And the more you know about yourself, the more confident you can be in what you know you want. So when you are confident in that, you can have the confidence to tell your spouse that. And know, if you run on the other end of the spectrum that maybe you are vocal and opinionated in no matter what you want, then you have to, err towards more of the grace side. But I think the open communication of whatever that is really the most important thing, because letting it fester is probably the only wrong decision.
The last one on this list is when you don't actually need that amazing deal. And I'm wondering, you put these two things together when you and your spouse agree or disagree about the amazing deal, right? Is this where maybe a third party comes in and it's better to maybe have an objective person in the room?
Well, I think this just goes back to what Paula said earlier, which is if I find something that's 30% off, it's still 70% on, or I'm paraphrasing Paula, whatever, however eloquently you said that earlier, it's still something. And just because it's a great price doesn't mean you actually need it. I think that's the big difference. And you know me, Joe, and I'm perfectly fine with a big long want list. Mine is never ending. Every time I see something, I put it on my want list. And I also think that's perfectly fine. I can have this big, long want list because I know where it fits in the hierarchy of all the other things from a financial standpoint that are important to us and our family. So if you start with the approach of, if I'm on track for my personal, my family's financial planning goals, and then there's something that I want, so be it. Have fun. Do it. But if you're not on track for those things, that's where, from a stress standpoint, that's where that stress comes in. And it's better to have somebody who's a little bit opposite than you in your relationship, especially in your relationship with money, to help just kind of keep you on the guardrails. So maybe that's your spouse or a friend or something like that, but somebody to kind of call your bluff, so to speak.
We're going to get everybody's takeaways here in just a second. And to kick off the takeaways, Ashley, hanging out with us here on Fireside, has a great one. She says that this is so much about balance and self-awareness. And I think those are definitely two key terms there. Let's have our guest of honor go last. And let's start, Diana, with you. What's your takeaway from this discussion?
I would say that frugality doesn't have to be about deprivation. That there is a way to align it with your values. And I really appreciated some of the points that Jen made.
OG?
I think for me, the biggest thing out of frugality is be ultra frugal in the things that are important to you. But I guess kind of the other way, be ultra frugal on the things that aren't super important to you is what I meant to say. And spend like a crazy person on the things that are super important to you.
Paula?
I would say frugality is nuanced and more is not always better, and it should not necessarily apply to all situations and experiences.
And Jen, you've got the last word.
I believe frugality is just being a good steward of your resources, and you can prioritize those resources in whatever order you like, as long as it aligns with the income that you are bringing in. But without fail, always value people first, because the life in front of you only has so many minutes. And then after that is your time, because that is your only non-renewable resource. And beyond that, spend without guilt in the things you value, whether it's you want to spend more to be eco-sustainable, or you want to buy more expensive pieces for your home, but you are a minimalist, or you just enjoy finding a deal. And that's kind of what gives you life. So you get to decide what your frugality looks like, as long as it's not at the expense of people and time.
All right. That's going to do it for today, everybody. We'd love to hear what's going on where you are. OG, big plans this weekend?
Yeah. Talk about rich get richer, going right from vacation into a golf tournament. So
oh, that's tough.
Yeah, I know.
I don't know how you do it. You got to go golfing with mom's neighbor, Doug, who's off on a golf course somewhere while we're recording this.
I did, but I think he's kind of mad at me because I may have whizzed a 3-wood by in the general vicinity of his cart and allegedly may have felt the breeze as it flew by.
He told me you were a little angry. You were kind of angry, man.
I'm passionate about the quality of golf that I play.
Yeah.
And when I don't play that up to my standards, then I get a little frustrated. But anyways, yeah, he hasn't talked to me since.
Paula, what are you getting passionate about this week on the Afford Anything show?
On the Afford Anything podcast, of course, every other episode, you join me to answer questions that come in from the community.
Brilliant.
And oh, they're amazing. We've also recently put out an episode that is a beginner's guide to crypto, specifically a beginner's guide to Bitcoin, Ethereum, and blockchain technology. And it is, if I may say so myself, probably the episode that I am most proud of the more than 330 episodes that I've produced so far. That one is my favorite.
Even above the ones I was on.
I know, right? It's saying a lot.
You're saying that right to my face, Paula.
You can hear me.
Actually, my friend Mike was listening to that episode. I got in the car. We were headed to just go grab a drink together, and he had it on, and he said, "This is a really good episode."
Well, tell him I said thank you. I put a lot of work into that episode, a lot of research, and I'm probably more proud of that episode than anything I've ever made so far.
Jen Smith, thank you for hanging out. I'm not going to ask you what's going on at the Amazing Frugal Friends podcast. Instead, I want to shine a light on what you've gone on next week, because as we said at the top of the show, you've got a lot of people joining you, and it's free.
Yeah. So if you enjoyed the conversation that we had today, that is essentially what we are having over 4 days, especially day one, because that's the day we're focused on buying less and buying more sustainably. So we have, gosh, over 20 amazing, amazing people from all your favorite personal finance podcasts and even some sustainability and minimalist podcasts too. So frugallivingsummit.com, get your free ticket, free goodie bag. Some of our really great sponsors are giving away some discounts, and it's going to be really, really fun. Really fun. And we're going to have a happy hour every night next week, that's Monday awesome. Through Thursday. We're just going to be geeking out on frugality.
Nerding out online at frugality. And I read somewhere there's over 1,000 people already signed up.
Yeah. So we passed 1,500. Probably by the time you're listening to this, we'll be close to 3,000.
Sure.
Is what
right.
We are thinking.
That is fantastic. Well, congratulations on a great event. And by the way, everybody, we'll link to that. We'll link to Paula's crypto episode. Won't link to OG playing golf because you don't want to see that on our show notes page at stackingbenjamins.com. Diana, you ready to finish this thing off?
Absolutely.
Here we go, guys. Diana, what should we have learned today?
So what should we have learned today? First, take a lesson from our roundtable. Being frugal is certainly better than being cheap, but even being frugal can go too far. Second, how do you know when your frugality has gone too far? How about when you're buying so much on sale that you get invited on that show Hoarders? That's a pretty good sign. But the big lesson, if you're in the car with Joe's mom, don't try playing the pretending to sleep game while she's getting gas. That woman will wake you up. You can't out-cheap her. Or can you? Got a story of someone who's super cheap? Send it to us at team@stackingbenjamins.com. We may just talk about your cheap story again on another episode. And to learn more about our guests and for more resources, you can head to our show notes page at stackingbenjamins.com. If you'd like to follow Jen Smith, then check out the Future of Frugal Summit, which takes place online July 19th to 22nd. Tickets are free and can be found at frugallivingsummit.com. You can hear more from Paula Pamp by tuning into the Afford Anything podcast. And I'm Diana Merriam. When I'm not here with you, I'm organizing the very best conference on money. It's called Economy, and it's coming to the University of Cincinnati on November 13th and 14th with a live Stacking Benjamin show the night before. How do you get tickets? Oh, I'll tell you. Head to economyconference.com for tickets and details, and come join us.
Welcome to the after show. This is the part of the show that doesn't exist. What?
Seriously, like, oh God, I did something wrong.
I was very nervous. I was like, are we done? Looking, and then I'm remembered. Like, I was like, I should probably just go the full time.
I'm feeling great.
It's always more fun when you do the after show live, though. It's a little more nerve wracking.
Oh, that was stressful.
You remember OG doing it on tour? It was always fun just hanging out on stage, saying nothing.
I do. Yeah, I remember people look at us like we're crazy.
Yes. And Paula, you were there in Orlando.
Yeah, I was just thinking about in Orlando that, you know, you were standing on stage. Everyone wanted to clap and you were like making the like shh hand gesture like, hey, quiet, don't clap. We're going to be really quiet right now.
So I want to have one last little discussion because I know I have a story about cheap gone too far. But I'm sure you guys have some cheap gone too far stories. Jen, we'll start with you. You got, know a relative, a friend, somebody that you met that maybe was a little too cheap.
You know, I grew up so cheap that I don't even know if that my gauge for it is properly metered.
I feel like going, how cheap are you? Or how cheap were you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess my childhood, everything always broke and we always got like the cheapest of everything. even if I really wanted the name brand of something, like, thankfully we didn't have like influencers or anything growing up. But now looking back, I can see, oh, like we definitely, and maybe this is why my aversion to buying used appliances comes from, is, gosh, everything never worked properly. I didn't know what like proper working things were until I, you know, became an adult and bought like name brand items.
Paula, you've got to have a cheap story. No? Okay,
here's an embarrassing one. Here's an embarrassing one. So I remember when I was in high school, I wanted to get a bagel. And instead of buying a bagel from the school itself, I like walked like through the cold. It was like winter. You know, I walked through the cold across the parking lot out over to some store like that was nearby to get it because it was like 50 cents cheaper. And I came back and me and my big mouth, like I tell a friend that and I say that, but it's like I'm saying it in a stage whisper, not realizing that the entire class can hear me. And then I just hear this laugh.
Oh, no.
And I realize the whole class is laughing at me.
It's like, are you kidding me? 50 cents. Yeah. Come on, Paula.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. I just remember the entire, I thought I was telling it just to her. And I just remember the whole class laughing. And I was like, oh.
Well, OG, how about you?
Well, the words frugal and OG.
Yeah.
Don't tend to go together.
They're not even in the same room.
That's a ballpark of anything. But I do have, something very, very recent, which is kind of interesting. My wife's grandfather built the cottage that we visit, and he's still alive, which is great. But as a child of the Depression and very middle class his entire life, everything has a purpose forever. There is no need to ever throw anything out, ever. Listen, I used to go up there when we were married, but before we had kids. And one time we got up to the cottage, it was the middle of winter, and there was no hot water. So the neighbor who was there full time, we knew him well. And I went over there in the morning and I said, hey, I think I'm doing all this right. Cause we'd shut, you know, you'd shut the cottage down.
Right.
And you know, if you weren't there and I said, what am I doing wrong? You just turn this, you press this button and it should have hot water. And he comes over and looks, he says, oh yeah, this thing's dead. So we called around, said, oh, you know, we're adults. We can handle this. So we call around, we get the only water tank plumber heater installer in, you know, the county, basically in the middle of the winter on a Saturday. And he says, well, it's, you know, to come out there and do all that, it's going to be $400. And I said, yeah, okay, come on out. So he comes out, he does it all, installs the whole thing. Boom, works great. So we're pretty proud of ourselves. We call Lissa's dad and then by proxy, her grandfather finds out about this. And he says, what happened? We said, well, you know, it was dated 1975. It's now 2005. You know, it worked. It did its thing for 30 years.
Yeah.
Check the box. Congratulations. You got a wonderfully used water heater. Did all this supposed to do? He says, what'd you do with the other one? I said, what'd I do with it? I don't know. I mean, the guy took it. He dumped the water out and like in the snow and he dragged it out and huffed it up onto his truck. And her grandpa was so ticked off. He's like, that's ridiculous. We could have fixed that one. It would have been just fine. We didn't need to have another one. And then just this most recent trip, we noticed that the microwave was different. We were talking about used appliances, but I said, what's the deal with the microwave? Well, grandpa had one in the basement that he said worked just fine. So we got rid of the other one. So we sold the one we had in order to get this one from grandpa's basement. Well, works very fine. Apparently, it doesn't actually mean works. It means lights up. So we had to go buy it. We had one that worked very fine. Instead, we had the one that was in the basement for 10 years. And anyways, so.
It was like Easy Bake Oven worked.
It was like the Hotel California. You could press any button you wanted, and you didn't know if your food was going to get cooked or not. Sometimes it was 10 seconds. Sometimes it was 10 minutes. It was a surprise. You just had to, you get what you get.
My Uncle Dick was the most frugal person that I know. And they were going on a on a trip, my two of my aunts and uncles together, my Uncle Eddie and Aunt Sue and my Uncle Dick and Aunt Ruth. And my Uncle Dick suggests that they stop for lunch on the way north to go look at lighthouses along the Great Lakes. And by the way, he also refused to go in any of the lighthouses because it was like a $3 like lighthouse preservation thing. So he's on a trip to see light. Like, I get not spending $3 if you don't care. He is on a trip to go see lighthouses and will not go in the lighthouse because it's $3. But he suggests stopping for lunch and said, there's this nice place in Reed City and we can stop there. And my Uncle Eddie, who hilariously told this story because he got back from this trip and said it was just unbelievable, all the stories of Uncle Dick being the cheapest human alive, and said, yeah, sounds great. Yeah, let's go stop for lunch. So Uncle Dick pulls into the restaurant parking lot and my Uncle Eddie and Aunt Sue get out and they're walking across the parking lot and they get to the door and open it up. And my Uncle Dick and Aunt Ruth are back at the car with the trunk open. And my Uncle Eddie goes, are you coming? Like what's going on? He goes, no, you guys go in and eat. We got sandwiches back here. We've got, so he proposed that they stop at a restaurant so my Uncle Eddie and Aunt Sue could eat at the restaurant, but he wasn't going to go in. He was going to eat sandwiches out of the back of the car. So that's mine. Diana, you've got the last one if you've got one.
The first thing that came to mind of like embarrassing frugal thing, probably when I was in New York City and I had first started like really getting motivated to get out of debt. But right before that, I had moved into, for the first time ever, like my own apartment living alone. Up until that point, I'd always have roommates and most of them like had all the kitchen stuff and like stuff that I didn't have. And so I found myself in a situation where I just discovered that I didn't want to spend money and I wanted to get out of debt, but I needed to like get all the stuff for my kitchen. And so I went a little bit crazy on like just trying to furnish my place. And the one thing I got was on Craigslist, someone was just like getting rid of a bunch of Tupperware for like $5. Someone's used Tupperware.
I can't do it.
And I like went and traveled in New York City, which, you know, it takes forever to get anywhere. So talk about like the value of time when you're being frugal. So I like schlep across the city to go pick up someone's used Tupperware. And I forget even like how much I got for it. I think it might have been like 10 pieces of Tupperware for $5 or something like that. And I just think back on that, like, that's ridiculous. I mean, since I've, you know, moved and needed Tupperware again, I think I bought like a whole 60-piece set for like $25
right
off of Amazon. That was just a level of like, I went too far.
The good news is the chicken salad was still in there too. No? Well, I hope you got a lot out of today's episode. But one thing that we talked about a little bit today, but we talk about a lot, is you got to have good partners on your team, stackers. And you know what? Navy Federal Credit Union could be that partner, because becoming a member at Navy Federal Credit Union could help you earn more and save more. And aren't those two of the big tenets, right? Have a debt strategy, earn more, save more. Their certificate options could earn you more than standard savings accounts with competitive rates. Not all financial institutions offer you as many choices for savings options as Navy Federal does. For example, you can start your savings journey with a low minimum deposit, add money at any time, and watch your savings grow. I think that's the coolest certificate. Thanks to flexible terms, you can use Navy Federal savings options for all kinds of goals, short or long term. Considering a big home improvement project? Maybe you want to consolidate debt. Well, as you're putting your plan together, you want to also have a debt strategy, right? You could borrow up to 100% of your home's equity with a fixed rate home equity loan with zero closing cost, or easily borrow as you go with a home equity line of credit. Don't get in over your head with debt. Make sure you have a great strategy and then take out debt as you need it. And Navy Federal's options certainly give you the flexibility to help you make life's big expenses seem more manageable. To learn more, visit NavyFederal.org. At Navy Federal, our members are the mission. Navy Federal is insured by NCUA, equal housing lender, membership required, terms and conditions apply, loan subject to approval.